Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Emmalyn Hartz. I represent the appellant attorney lien claimant Brian Wade, doing business as the law office of Brian J. Wade. I'd like to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal, please. This appeal arises out of a fee dispute between the Ferguson firm and Teller & Associates, in which Wade represented Ferguson. After he was permitted to withdraw for cause, he filed an attorney's lien to ensure payment of the fees he incurred in representing Ferguson in that dispute. The trial court invalidated the lien on Ferguson's motion, finding that the disputed fees were not proceeds received by Ferguson based on services that Wade performed, and that the funds that Ferguson received were not obtained by a judgment entered against Teller. Trial court erred in invalidating that lien for three reasons. First, the contract between Ferguson and Wade expressly grants Wade the lien. Second, the lien is valid under RCW 6040.010 subsection 1D. And third, that it's valid under RCW 6040.010 subsection 1E. Turning to the first basis for reversal, the contract between Ferguson and Wade expressly grants Wade a lien against any proceeds by or on behalf of Ferguson in contention with the fee dispute, including pursuant to RCW 6040.010. And that particular provision of the contract is in the clerk's papers at CP 210 to 211. Sandra Ferguson is an experienced attorney. She's familiar with fee agreements. She had the opportunity to review the proposal submitted to her by Wade. She did so. 2 days later, she signed it without objection. Where Wade's lien arose by operation of the contract, the trial court erred by invalidating it under Fruitland versus Thayer. With respect to the second basis for reversing relates to the lien being valid under RCW 6040.010 subsection 1D. And I think this goes to some extent to Judge Dwyer's question, which is that a lien is granted upon an action and its proceeds after the commencement thereof. In this particular case, the action that we have for which Ferguson retained Wade is the fee dispute with Teller. Under the plain words of the statute, the lien arose by operation of law the moment that Wade commenced that action and filed the lawsuit against Teller. And the lien automatically attaches to any funds that Ferguson recovered. Here, Ferguson recovered 50% of the disputed fee. And according to this court in Smith versus Moran, those funds are proceeds because they represent the monetary sum that Ferguson recovered at the conclusion of the dispute with Teller. And to answer Judge Dwyer's...
Let's talk about where that would, as a practical matter, where it leaves you. Now, under Rule 62, under Civil Rule 62, the funds, because there was a notice of appeal filed, the funds could be dispersed any time after 14 days after the order, the July 30 order.
That's correct, Your Honor.
You brought a motion on August 22, which is 23 days later, seeking a stay. So that's more than 14 days. So as far as the money, or as far as the dispersal you were, that your motion was directed toward, why would that issue not be moot?
It's not moot, Your Honor, for several reasons. First of all, with respect to the timing of that motion, we were unaware at the time we filed that motion that the funds had even been dispersed.
Well, but that doesn't matter.
I understand.
Because Rule 62 would say that by the 23rd day, you would not have a reason to expect that they would still have to be there.
Correct.
They might be there, but they might not be there.
I don't disagree, Your Honor.
My question goes to, it seems that your motion was to stay the dispersal of the funds pursuant to the July 30 order, right?
Correct.
Okay. Now, if that was target gone by, isn't that issue moot?
The issue, Your Honor, is not moot even with the funds having been distributed for two reasons. First of all, this court, if it reverses and reinstates the lien, can direct the trial court on remand to require Ferguson to redistribute the funds under RAP 12.8. But in addition, as you've heard in the prior case, and as Ferguson has itself acknowledged, funds remain on deposit in the court registry
well,
to be dispersed.
That's a different issue, though, right?
But no, Your Honor. To the extent,
well, I know you're trying to make it all. Are we entitled to some money here? What I'm saying is, You brought a motion that requested particular relief. You brought it at a time when the relief had already taken place. Seems to me that's moot. Seems to me that the argument as to whether or not your lien attaches still to the money that's still in the registry of the court would not be moot.
I think what I understand your question is, to some extent, Your Honor, we're no longer arguing about the court's decision to deny the motion for stay. What we're focused on with this appeal today is whether the trial court properly invalidated the lien because it was either not proceeds or not obtained by a judgment.
And you're entitled, your argument is that your lien entitles you to money from the registry of the court.
Absolutely.
And since there is money in the registry of the court, shouldn't that be what we're arguing about rather than the target gone by money that's already no longer in the registry of the court?
Yes, Your Honor. We're arguing that to the extent there are funds in the registry, Wade is entitled to them to the extent that Ferguson has an interest. That with the attorney's lien, his lien is a superior lien and essentially good as against all others, and he was entitled to that lien the moment that he commenced the lawsuit.
Again, may it please the court, I'm John Minster, this time representing the respondent, Ferguson Firm. I'd like to address the questions that were raised. We do have pending before the court a motion to dismiss that we filed that was deferred to the panel to move to dismiss what I've captioned as order number two, which is the order denying the motion to stay. And we argued that the order, that order was moot, as the trial judge found, and we're asking that the appeal of that motion be dismissed. I'm not sure if I heard counsel conceding on that or not, but in any event, I would invite the court's attention to that. We have a motion to dismiss that part of the appeal. Secondly, we do have a motion to dismiss the appeal of the first order. And this interrelates into the question you asked, Judge Squire, and that's the order finding that the lien is not valid. We contend that that was not a final order under RAP 2.2, and that therefore the appeal by Mr. Wade of the first order should likewise be dismissed.
How could it not be a final order when your client accepted the entire benefits of it?
It's not a final order in terms of the lien. The funds that my client accepted.
Well, the July 30 order is, because the July 30 order says there is no lien.
Correct. And the issue.
And then your client then brought a motion to accept the benefits of that by taking the money. Seems pretty final.
Well, there is another way to look at that.
What else can happen in the trial court that could affect that?
The issue that's raised by the lien is whether or not attorney's fees are owed by Ms. Ferguson to Mr. Wade or vice versa.
Right.
And as we pointed out in our brief, Mr. Wade and Ms. Ferguson have whatever options are available to them to have that determined. But at the heart of this case is the contention that just because an attorney makes a claim that somebody owes him money for something doesn't mean he can go and attach funds that were earned and put in the court registry through a lawsuit and litigation that he had nothing to do with. And in that regard, I'm simply asking you to affirm the trial court.
But that's getting to the merits, not getting to whether we can address the merits. And usually the determining factor as to whether something's appealable is, well, it's a final order if there's nothing left for the trial court to do with regard to that aspect of the dispute between these two parties. And although he's not a named party in the litigation, he's a party the same as if he had Rule 11 sanctions imposed against him and was going to appeal here, and we would recognize him as a party. So,
I got off the track a little bit there. The lien is a procedural device so that when somebody, in fact, an attorney has secured a judgment for a client or, you know, complied with a statute, the attorney can file the lien to attach property that he's earned, none of which happened in this case. So the piece of paper that he filed that he called a lien was held invalid by the trial judge. That is simply a procedural ruling that he can't collect what he claims is owed through that piece of paper. He can go do it in some other way, and that's why the order, in fact, as we view it, is not a final order. Mr. Wade, you know, can do what he wants to do, as can Ms. Ferguson, in terms of resolving whatever issue they have. But the lien's just a procedural device. It's not a substantive right.
Let me ask you now about the issue that I raised in the
sure.
first case. If this is a valid lien, if it was wrongly determined to not be a valid lien, would it be so that it has always attached to the, to all of the money that was in the registry, and the fact that some money was dispersed would not interfere with the fact that it remains attached to the money that is still in the registry, notwithstanding a private agreement between two parties other than Mr. Wade?
Mm-hmm.
Do you understand my question?
Yes, I do. And that's, I agree with you. I think that, or I agree with the suggestion in your question. If you assume that the lien is valid, and of course our contention in the appeal is it's not.
I understand.
If you don't jump through the hoop.
And if we do that, do we get past mootness? Because there's a real dispute still.
I think you have to deal with mootness because I think the lien is a procedural device rather than a substantive right to actually attach money. You know, because you can, like, file a lawsuit to attach things, and that's the purpose of the lawsuit, real property, mortgages, foreclosures, whatever. But this doesn't fall into that. Therefore,
okay. I'm not trying to take up all your time on this, but I've sort of gotten to all my questions about. It seems to me that it's interrelated with the mootness question.
It is interrelated, and I appreciate your asking the question. However, if you, aside from the whether, you know, I think that there's a mootness issue because I think liens are procedural, not substantive. But if you get past that, you hold that the lien is valid under the lien statute, which is strictly construed. If you, you know, reject our arguments in that regard, you say this is a valid lien, then I see no reason why it doesn't run against the funds that are currently in the registry, but certainly not against the funds that were dispersed for all the reasons you've already, you and counsel have already explored.
That are out somewhere in the commercial society
mm-hmm.
being exchanged.
Right.
Yeah.
That was our contribution to the stimulus. Okay. How am I doing? Oh, it's E3. Okay. Okay, counsel says the lien attaches automatically. I think we've dealt with that. The motion to dismiss, I've covered that. Subsection D, the trial court's findings, if you were to hold the lien valid, you'd have to overcome the trial court's findings, which are directly in point in our favor, both as to subsection D and as to subsection E. And I would ask you to affirm the trial court's findings about that. I do not think that Mr. Wade should be able to attach funds in the registry under these circumstances. And the statute was written to say if a lawyer makes money for his client, then the client can't, you know, get away with it, just like the in Taylor versus Shigaki in our prior case. If the lawyer substantially performs, the client can't go to the adjuster and cut a deal at the last minute and avoid that. I think that the moral or, you know, ethical analysis, not ethical, but the analogy is the same. I don't think if he didn't earn the money, get the money for, he shouldn't be able to attach 80 grand because he did it in something else. Unless the court has any other questions for me.
Well, specifically, what did the court find in subsection, in her findings related to subsection D and subsection
E? Subsection D.
And E.
Okay. The order is an appendix to the brief. And the discussion of subsection D, the court's finding is at the bottom of CP 416, starting at line 22, where the court says the attorney's fees, and the total sum is there, do not represent proceeds received by Ferguson after arbitration or mediation due to services performed by Mr. Wade, RCW, citing the statute. The funds were earned by Teller and Ferguson well before Mr. Wade was retained. And that goes to my point that the lien statute is designed to secure payment for the lawyer who goes out and earns the money. And similarly, on E, that's covered on CP 417 in the order, lines 2 through 7, where it states that the funds that are currently in dispute were not obtained by a judgment on behalf of Ferguson against Teller. And she cites the statute and also the case of Wilson versus Henkel. And she points out that Teller, the adverse party, consistently maintained that Ms. Ferguson was entitled to half the fees generated in the underlying matter, which Mr. Wade had nothing to do with. So those findings, which are, I would contend, not only supported by substantial evidence, but supported by the only evidence, are accurate. They should be affirmed, and therefore you should hold that the procedural device of the lien, or the piece of paper that he labeled a lien, is not a lien under the statute, and affirm the trial court's order. Are there any other questions? Oops, I'm out of time.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your attention.
I'd like to make, four brief points in rebuttal. First of all, we don't have to appeal from the denial of the stay to address the question of the validity of Mr. Wade's lien. Second of all, with respect to the mootness issue, if Ferguson were to prevail in its appeal against Teller, which is the case that's linked with this one, Ferguson could potentially recover additional monies to which Wade's lien would also attach, because under the statute, he has an interest in the funds that Ferguson receives. The fourth point is that an attorney is not required to file a lawsuit to secure the payment of their fees under Ross versus Scannell. And we would submit to this court that the dispositive case here is not Wilson versus Henkel or even Suleiman versus Cantino. It's this court's decision in 2008 of Smith versus Moran. And finally, the last issue I think I would raise is that you continually hear Ferguson indicating that this has to be construed narrowly. And in fact, that's not the case. When the legislature amended this statute and made substantial changes to it in 2004, it specifically said that you were to interpret it broadly to give effect to its purpose, which is to recognize that an attorney has an interest in the client's property.
What about the argument that counsel has to be the procuring cause of the recovery before there's a basis for an attorney lien?
Your Honor, I think that's a very good question, and we would argue that Mr. Wade, in fact, did procure funds for Ms. Ferguson. In this particular case, when this dispute started, Ferguson was essentially saying that Teller is not entitled to anything. I want all of it. Throughout the litigation on the motion for summary judgment from Teller, Teller was arguing several alternative theories. First, that Ferguson is entitled to a 50-50 split of the fees. Second, that Ferguson is entitled to less than 50% of the fee. And in fact, that she's entitled to nothing. And Mr. Wade performed services for Ferguson that got her at least the 50-50 split of those fees, which is why he performed services and his lien can attach to the funds that she's received. Your Honor, I don't know. I think you had one question with respect to the different bases for the trial court order. Were those addressed properly for you?
Yes.
Okay. In this particular instance, we would ask the trial court to reverse and reinstate Mr. Wade's lien. It attached automatically as soon as he filed the lawsuit against Teller on behalf of Ferguson. It's valid because the contract between Ferguson and Wade specifically says that he is entitled to a lien for anything that Ferguson recovers in the fee dispute with Teller. It's valid under RCW 6040.010, subsection 1, subsection D, because she recovered proceeds in that dispute. And third, it's valid because it also represents funds that she received at the conclusion of that dispute when a judgment was entered. It doesn't have to be entered against Teller specifically, as I believe it was Judge Dwyer recognized. We have a final order between Ferguson and Teller that resolves their dispute. Ferguson itself is appealing from that order. It's therefore a final order and a final determination of the party's rights, and therefore Wade's lien can attach to the proceeds that come from that judgment. Thank you.
Thank you.